Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. It's raining outside. So different than what we had last weekend with the sunshine. Dr. Mixon, remember all our beautiful sunshine we had?
I do remember all the beautiful sunshine we had.
But we knew that we would, you know, we're going to get some rain, and that's what we're doing today. So everybody that was out planting last week or out in their yards, hopefully you were out doing something outside. Yeah, I'm going to get a little rain done today.
Well, there you go. See, that's balance. So
yes.
Last weekend you planted. Now the rain is here. So you don't have to water the plants anymore,
I literally
anymore, right?
put my hanging baskets in the lawn. It's like, hey, do your thing. So
do your thing.
And Dr. Umeb, you were in the sunshine.
Yeah, I was not even here to enjoy the
sunshine. Not even here. You were in Florida at a conference gaining information.
Indeed.
While Dr. Mixon and I were here. And we're joined today. Yes.
Yeah, holding the fort down.
Yes, and we're joined today by Dr. Jimenez from our Tacoma Clinic. So welcome.
Hello.
Yes, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Oh, I think I just heard some of your patients and fans going, yay, she's on the radio. Yeah, so a full house of doctors today. Yes. Why don't I go ahead, before we get our medical updates for the week, give you the phone number so that you can call in with your questions for Dr. Jimenez or Dr. Umeb or Dr. Mixon. 800-465-8770 is that number to call in. That's 800-465-8770. And we always like to kind of find out what's going on in the medical world with some type of a news update, medical update, if there's anything new that we should be aware of. Dr. Mixon?
Well, a couple of things. There is a new RSV vaccine that is out recommended for the elderly.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We've never had an RSV vaccine before. Usually this has been a disease we all picked up as childhood, the respiratory syncytial virus. And old folks would sometimes get it. But I'm a little wondering. I don't know if I would call it concern, but I'm wondering if all of the hoopla and the naysaying, some of it justified with the lies we were told about the coronavirus vaccines.
Right.
Mm. And the misdirection by the CDC and the NIH. If that's kind of poisoned the well, I'm going to be watching with interest to see what percentage of elderly people adopt this new RSV vaccine.
Oh, okay.
Because my guess is that the misbehavior of the authorities over the last few years has made an awful lot of older Americans hesitant to believe in any new vaccine they come up with.
Mm. What type of vaccine is it?
It is a new mRNA, messenger RNA vaccine. Mm. Yeah. That way they were able to develop it quickly.
Okay. From the panic that they created last winter, probably. Remember when they said everything's going to go up for RSV?
I wonder what percentage of elderly get RSV.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm. Yeah, it's not one of those things that they keep weekly or monthly statistics on. Mm. We were told there was a big surge of RSV in children after, you know, the coronavirus isolation stopped because the kids had not been exposed to each other. And by and large, all those kids that had been protected by not being around other kids suddenly all got together and got contaminated.
Ah.
We had a big surge, but then it's dropped back down to baseline levels. There's no longer a, you know, a giant surge in RSV among the population. So it's just kind of an interesting thing that now they come up with a vaccine for the elderly. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, but the fact that they came out with it now, Jerry, means, Jerry, they've been, it's been in the works for probably several years.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Or maybe not.
But
yes. Well, we hope it's been several years, but
Okay. But yeah, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
The other bit of news that is a bit gloomier. It's a rainy day. We can do gloomy news today.
Sure.
You know, if you give out too much gloomy news, then we'll have to eat fried food later on.
All right.
So don't give out too much gloomy news. Let's be
throw a lot of ketchup on it. Ketchup makes everything better.
I know.
That's right.
It certainly does. And then you go into coma. Food coma.
Right.
But no, the gloom that I am about to spread this morning is that 20% now of the colon cancer is being found in people under 50.
Oh.
You know, this used to be a disease of the elderly when people would get colon cancer in their 70s and 80s, and rarely we'd see someone in, you know, a late 50s or early 60s. But now it's moving down and down and getting more and more common, and 20% of it is people below 50. They've moved the screening down to 45. It used to be 50.
Yeah, right.
But even at 45, they're going to miss some.
Yeah. You know, when Chadwick Boseman died early from colon cancer, he highlighted this problem and made it a public issue. Before that, many people didn't even know about it. And then
Chadwick Boseman, the Black Panther
actor.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, he led a very healthy lifestyle. And so the question was, if he can get it, then, you know, anybody could. And the issue is, what has changed in our lifestyle that is increasing this likelihood, and especially in younger people? And that's the problem. We weren't even screening until the age of 50 till then. And now we have reduced the screening age to 45, especially in the high-risk population. So, you know, if you have a family member or somebody who you know has had it, make sure you let your physicians know so that you would qualify for an insurance-covered test.
Yeah, and they have a stool test out that all they do is they send you a couple of little swabs and a container to put them in, and you just, you know, defecate, reach into the toilet and rub the stool with a swab.
Oh, okay.
Drop them in the envelope. It goes on a prepaid mailer and it goes off, and they check the stool sample that you've picked up on the swab.
Wow. For you can do that at home.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, for genetic markers for colon cancer.
Wow.
And it's not 100% accurate, but nothing is. Mm-hmm. But it's like 96% accurate. It'll pick up the vast majority of them. Mm-hmm. And it is basically 100% covered by insurance, and it doesn't hurt. You don't have to go through that massive prep that you do for the colonoscopy.
Right. Yes. And if it comes back positive,
then you get a colonoscopy.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
If the test is positive. And they don't recommend it in people, I think it's 73 or 75, somewhere in the mid-70s, because you get too many false positives.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So once you're in your mid-70s, they want you to have the colonoscopy instead because the stool will give you too many false positives. I went ahead and used it, despite being 75. But the reason, my thinking was, if it's negative, it's still negative. They're not reporting false negatives. They're reporting false positives.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's false positive, then I've got to get a colonoscopy anyway.
Right.
And if it's a negative, I've saved myself a colonoscopy.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So,
And how often do you do this, Dr. Mixon?
Well, I mean, it's designed to be done annually, actually,
for
older people. You know, we used to do colonoscopies every 3 to 5 years, but that we pull that number out of the air. Nobody knows how fast the tumors develop. You know, if someone had adenomatous polyps found that were benign, they would move them up and do them every 3 years.
That's right. Okay.
But nobody really knew. I mean, that was a guess.
All right.
And still is.
Wow. Okay.
So, this at least is a test you can do far more often because people will put up with it. It's less expensive. It's less invasive. It's not, you don't have to do that 24-hour prep.
Oh, the prep,
to drink
the worst.
All this
take
stuff
time off
that.
Work.
Yes. Yeah. Boy, whoever could invent better prep, you know, that, hey, $1 million to you for inventing something that's quicker, faster, and
yes.
Yeah, take it an hour before your colonoscopy. But no, we're not there yet.
No, you got to clean your entire bowel out or the
yes.
colonoscopy oh. doesn't see what you need to see.
Yeah, so. They can't okay. see it.
Yeah, anything, so, yeah. So you spend about, you know, 12 to 15 hours on the toilet. So, no, this way you can just, you know, your normal prep, your
okay.
normal life, nothing special to be done. You just tell your insurance company you want the stool test for colon cancer.
Okay.
And they will send it out to you. And all of you on Medicare, it's 100% covered. In fact, most of the Medicare insurance covers are automatically sending it to people over 65.
Mm, okay.
Wow. That's right.
And this is an easy test. Okay. So, doctor, with the under 50 age group, a lot of our audience might be going, what do you think? Why do you think it's – is it dietary?
I think it's a combination of things.
Okay.
I'm going to blame a lot of it on sedentary lifestyle.
Okay.
You know, the purpose of our immune system – is to recognize and destroy non-self. Anything that's not you that is in your system is supposed to be killed and gotten rid of. That's what your immune system is all about. Young people have low incidence of all cancers simply because they have robust immune systems. And, you know, we undergo malignant transformation, a mutation in a cell. The immune system finds it quickly and kills it.
Mm.
But the immune system is a dynamic process, and if you're overweight, which an increasingly high percentage of young Americans is, you actually change your immune system.
Right.
And if you are sedentary, you make further negative changes to your immune system. And if you have inadequate muscle mass, you have further negative changes to your immune system. So much of our modern lifestyle between being overweight, sedentary, not exercising vigorously on a regular basis, that alone decreases our immune system's ability to find and kill cancers of all kinds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I suspect we're seeing a fair bit of that in our younger population. You know, the example we've got in men is that testosterone levels have been dropping in young men since the late 1960s. And right now we get men in their 30s who have testosterone levels that we previously would have seen in their grandfathers, we'd have been seeing.
Wow.
And so that's that's a scary. Female fertility is dropping. Women are both choosing to have fewer babies, but women are also less able to have babies. So human fertility is dropping in the first world.
Right.
And how much of that is due to dietary, how much is due to lifestyle, I don't know. That's all up in the air. But we know it's happening. We are just not sure why.
Okay.
Yeah. I wonder about, like, genetically modified foods and energy beverages. And we're being exposed to so many different chemicals and pesticides and that
Those
really
are...
do affect, like you were saying, our immune system right there in our gut.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And we didn't have those things 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Not even 30 years ago.
No.
coming back from the conference, one of the things was exposure to toxins. Mm-hmm. And it's not just things that we eat or inhale or the air that we breathe. It's also what we put on our skin.
Yes.
Yes.
And people don't even think about that, right?
No.
We put lotions, creams, powders. We put so many things, soaps and so many things on our skin is such a large surface area of our body, and so that is another area. And then you come away from there and you go, oh my god, there is so much toxicity in this environment.
I'm gonna
live
in a bubble.
Yes. you took a shower after that conference, right? And
but no soap.
Yes, no soap, no lotion. And oh boy, good conversation. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. We will be back with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, and our special guest doctor in the studio, Dr. Jimenez. And if you have questions for any of the doctors, please feel free to give us a call. We already have some calls on the line. 800-465-8770 is that number to call. 800-465-8770. 865-8770. We are going to talk about water in just a moment. Stay right there.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love.
Oh yeah, we're back.
Talking about socially unacceptable songs right now. You know, I can just see the world's feminist rising up to storm his home if he were still around.
Wow.
Because he considers love a game?
I want to know where all the feminists are that are not complaining about the men in the women's sports. And oh, that's a whole nother can of worms.
I don't know.
It's like, where are they? Why aren't they upset about this? So
yeah, well, my daughter got that in school yesterday.
Ah.
You know, it was interesting. They were going to have this thing, the gender bending talk, and they told the parents that they could opt out of it. And apparently a fair number of parents got upset.
Hmm. And upset so that there was an opt out?
No, got upset that they were going to even talk about it.
Got it. Okay.
The school really doesn't have a choice because it's a state mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Your legislators have mandated that they must tell the children that you can be male, female, or something in between. And so, you know, that is the law. In order for the school to stay accredited and be allowed to practice in the state of Washington, they have to lie to the kids.
You know,
it is required indoctrination in the state of Washington. And so when they gave us that, I sent a little email to the school nurse who was going to be doing the presentation. And I said, you know, I understand that you are required by state mandate to tell my children or tell my child this. However, she knows the truth. And she knows the genetic basis for gender, that, you know, if you have a Y chromosome, you are male. It doesn't matter, no matter what you think. And so I said, you know, I don't know what she's going to do. She may try to avoid embarrassing you and stay quiet, or she might stand up and correct you in front of the class. And whatever she decides to do, I will support her.
There you go.
Because she is, you know, a tough little 11-year-old girl.
She's speaking truth.
And, so they canceled that part of the education. But then they snuck it in yesterday without telling anybody.
Oh, boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They didn't warn anybody and didn't give parents a chance to opt out. They just dropped in. Into another class yesterday without the parental warnings. And so Ivory came home and told me about it and told me, you know, she was just told that men can have periods and get pregnant. And so I said, well, what did you say? And she said, I stood up and told him, if you've got a X and a Y chromosome, you're a man, you don't have a uterus, and you can't get pregnant, nor can you menstruate.
She is correct.
She is correct. I said, well, you got that almost right. I said, what you really should have let him know, though, is that there are men, there are women, and then there are mentally unbalanced men who believe they're women, and there are you know, mentally ill women who believe they are men, but believe in it doesn't make it true. You know, Dr. Jimenez is, how tall are you, Dr. Jimenez?
4'10" 3/4"
4'10" 3/4" Now, if you believed you were 7'4", you might believe you were 7'4" in, you know, to the depths of your heart.
Yes.
But the rest of us would still know you weren't 7'4".
We would know, you know. She's 4'10" 3/4".
That's right. She's 4'10" 3/4". And if you tried to sue the basketball, you know, associations for not giving you a job at 7'4", you know, they would throw you out of court.
There you go.
And yet we have this thing that we have to believe everybody's delusional state about gender, but about nothing else.
No.
You know, you have to, if a man believes he's a woman, we have to let him go shower with teenage girls.
Ugh.
You know, I mean, it's really kind of weird. although in all honesty, when I was a 16-year-old testosterone-ridden young man, I might have decided to be a girl on Wednesdays at gym time. I don't know.
No one would have believed
that's
you.
That's right. It's a good thing that's not happening, that you're not a 16-year-old boy now,
that's
Dr.
right.
Mixon.
But,
okay.
But the reality is, you know, believing it doesn't make it true. Mm-hmm. And I noticed there are lines. For instance, if a man believes he's a woman, we're all expected to share his delusional state. But if he believes he's a particular woman, say Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. and shows up at her bank expecting them to give him her $150 million estate,
yeah,
they're going to turn him down.
What?
So, you know, you have to believe that he's a woman, but you can't believe that he's a particular woman.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Certainly not a wealthy,
well, not
politically
this year.
Connected one.
We'll see how it
yeah.
degrades.
That's right. But on the other hand, there was a guy who, you know, sexually molested teenage girls and under teens, actually, pre-adolescent girls, and he got arrested. And after the arrest, he said, you know, I am a woman. I'm a girl. And because he was 17 at the time, he was not. So they put him in a juvenile home for girls.
Oh, my.
So they put a male rapist in a facility with teenage girls.
His victims.
Because,
his prey.
Yeah, because he said he was a woman.
And put everybody else at risk.
Yes. Which
because
makes,
he is like, what?
And he didn't decide he was a woman until after he got arrested.
Well, yeah.
But then he decided he was a teenage girl and needed to be incarcerated with other teenage girls.
Wow.
And this courts in California bought it. And they
Well, of course they did.
And
wow.
Then, guess what? Two of the female inmates turned up pregnant. I wonder why.
How did that occur? Wow. Our world. Oof. Well, let's talk about something maybe a little easier than that, Dr. Mixon. Yeah, we're all shaking our heads going, wow. Okay, you believe it or not, this is Leading Edge Medicine, and we get on a lot of different topics. But you know what? This is making headlines today. You cannot open social media, look in a newspaper, turn on the television.
It's not just social media. It's in the medical schools.
It is. It's
medical
in the schools.
Schools are now being taught that men who identify as a woman are women and must be treated as women.
Wow.
Which is just crazy because for some reason, medical schools have given up on the concept of biology. Hmm. And they're now treating people based on political philosophy rather than human physiology.
And what if they change their minds?
Well,
which
what
they could.
Yeah,
is that the fluidity thing coming in? Oh, boy.
Well, of course you can. You can be, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday you can be male, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday you can be female, and on Sundays, you can be non-binary.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's take some calls and get some questions here. Whatever you would like to talk about, Leading Edge Medicine, 800-465-8770. We're going to talk water now. We have a caller from Mount Lake Terrace. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Before I ask my question, I just want to say I was asked one time what my gender was, and I said I'm an XY chromosome. You figure it out. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what my daughter came up with when they are asked about their pronouns. And her pronoun is Your Majesty.
I like it. That I could do.
If a boy can be she can be queen of the school. I mean,
why not?
Makes sense to me.
And we'll address her that way or she'll be offended.
That's
okay.
Right.
It's only fair. It's only fair. Okay,
anyway.
So Your Highness, King, Terry, okay. How can we help you today?
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Okay. Yes, Your Grace.
Jeez, I've got two different water purification systems here. One is an activated charcoal under the counter that I've had since the 80s, and I'm on my third water wipe.
Okay.
So they work a little bit differently, and there are three things I'm looking for comparisons of. With the activated charcoal, does it remove wanted minerals? I know it doesn't remove arsenic and fluoride. On the distiller, it will remove minerals. But what about the other two? Does it take out the arsenic that we have in our water supply?
Yes, it does.
The fluoride?
Yeah. Arsenic, okay. Fluoride, the heavy metals, being metals, have relatively high boiling points. And so water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, 100 degrees centigrade. It goes off as vapor, then gets recondensed back to distilled water. So, yeah, that the distiller is very, very good at getting rid of all of the heavy metals. So that's the good news. Okay. Now you are removing all the minerals and that adds, you know, taste and so on to the water. But if you've got a decent diet, you're getting plenty of minerals anyway. But, you know, that is the one drawback.
What about the activated charcoal? Does it remove minerals as well, or how does that work?
No, it doesn't remove minerals. It is very, very good at organic compounds. So it's going to get rid of the chlorination disinfection byproducts.
Right.
So let me since most of the audience has no idea what I just said, let me explain that just a little bit, okay? When we get our water, most of our water here is from reservoirs. It runs down in the rivers and streams from the mountains, from the snowpack. And on the way down, it picks up dead animals and bear poop and squirrels and, you know, birds and mice and everything else.
Mountain water.
And leaves and debris. And it flows into the reservoir where we filter it through sand to get rid of the large particles. But then it goes in and it is chlorinated. The chlorine rips apart the proteins involved in all of the bacteria and the viruses and what do they call the little one-celled organisms? Anyway, everything shouldn't be there is destroyed by the chlorine, but it's not truly destroyed. It's ripped into pieces, and it doesn't disappear into the atmosphere or go into somewhere. All those chlorination byproducts, those proteins that have been damaged by the chlorine, are still there. And most of them turn out to be carcinogens. They do cause cancers.
Wow. Okay.
So anytime we chlorinate our water, we are creating a series of carcinogens. Now, we test for three of the several dozen that are created, and those three have, quote, acceptable limits that they will allow the water to have. But it's a perfectly rational public health decision. Before we chlorinated the water, periodically, waterborne disease would sweep through the community and kill tens of thousands of people. You know, people would die of typhoid and all sorts of. And so we've made a trade-off. We've decided to chlorinate the water. In a city the size of Seattle, we are probably killing half a dozen people a year of cancers, but we are saving thousands of people a year from infectious disease. So if you have to make a decision, do I do something that might kill, you know, 4, 5, 6, or do I avoid killing those 4, 5, 6 and allow 10,000 to die? Well, obviously, the public health decision is pretty obvious.
Right.
You know, we go ahead and we knowingly treat the water in ways that we know are going to kill a few people. That's the joy of both the osmotic, not the charcoal filtration, by the way. Filters that do a negative osmosis filtration get rid of all of those compounds, in addition to the heavy metals.
And what types of filtration systems? Are we talking the filters in your refrigerator, perhaps?
Well, it depends on your refrigerator, but yes, some of them do. And there are membrane filtration systems that you can now put under your sink and so on. And some of them also have an activated charcoal second stage.
Right.
So you filter out all the metals and stuff, and you do the activated charcoal to get rid of any organic compounds.
Okay.
So either distillation or proper modern filtration will get rid of all of those problems. We can't filter all the water, and you don't care about the water in your toilet.
Right.
You don't care about the water you're washing your car with and you're watering your lawn with. So But you do care about the water you're going to drink.
Yes.
And you're going to cook with.
Cook with it, yeah.
And filtering or distilling those is a good idea.
All right. Is that helpful for you, Terry?
Yes, it is. Thank you much.
Very good. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Thanks for your call. All right. We're going to talk blood sugar next, which is something we do at Longevity. Boy, do we have the answers for you. Our next caller is from Olala. We'll take that call in just a moment. If you'd like to get through with your question today on Leading Edge Medicine, here's the number. It's 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine.
What a pathetic guy. Talk about loser with a
such
capital
a
L.
Sad guy. Wow. Hi there. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, and our guest doctor in the studio, Dr. Jimenez from our Longevity Tacoma Clinic. So
hello.
Welcome.
And since Dr. Jimenez had to stand up, I had to stand up too because it's discouraging when I'm sitting down and she and I are the same height when she stands up.
I think we all need to line up and get a picture. There we go. There we go. All right. Well, this is Leading Edge Medicine. Taking your phone calls today, whatever the topic, a recent diagnosis, maybe some symptoms, maybe something you don't quite understand that you or a loved one are going with, to deal with your health. Please give us a call. We'd love to offer some help, some information for you at 800-465-8770. We have Jeff on the line right now. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for your patience.
No problem, Dr. Mixon. I'm out of my park again, slogging around past an hour. I'm the one that was diagnosed with diabetes, too, and finally I went to a nutritionist, and she said, well, do your blood finger check or blood fasting blood sugar in the morning. And for the last, I've done it for like 2.5 weeks. I went 131 the first week, 119 the second, and 112 this week. But I watched a guy on YouTube, Dr. Stan Eckberg, talking about the correlation between your blood sugar levels and your A1C, your red blood cells longevity, that your blood sugar can drop, but your A1C is a laggard indicator based on the life expectancies of the red blood cells. I just
kind of commented on that. Yeah, well, let's chat about that just a minute. When you, let's say a non-diabetic, let's say a perfectly lean, healthy person like Dr. Jimenez here, you know, she may get up in the morning and have a fasting blood sugar of 70. Mm. I'm making these numbers up. I have no idea what her sugars are. But anyway.
Closer to 86, but okay.
86, okay. By our conventions, until her fasting sugar is 121 or 126, she's not technically a diabetic. But then if she goes out and has, you know, Frosted Flakes for breakfast, which I know she would never do, her sugar might hit 145 for 15 or 20 minutes until her insulin spiked a bit and brought it back down. And so her range in the course of a day might run 70 to 145 as a perfectly healthy non-diabetic. Okay. when she is in that brief period and she's in the 140s, she is glycolysating, that is damaging red blood cells at a furious rate. Mm-hmm. But then when her sugars drop, she is now doing minimal additional damage because her sugar is now down below 100. Mm-hmm. Okay. when we get her A1C, we aren't looking at what her peak or her valley was. What we're seeing is her average over a three-month period, not even an average for the day, an average of over a 3 to 4 month period.
Because the life cycle of a red blood cell is 3 months.
It's 3 to 4 months, depending on the individual and how fast they make cells and so on. So when we look at an A1C, we're looking at a long-term longitudinal picture of what your average sugar peaks and valleys and mid-range are over time.
Right.
With a fasting sugar, we're looking at how low does your sugar go at its lowest.
Right.
But even that's not totally accurate in the morning.
Right.
Because many people get what we call the dawn effect.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You've been asleep. Your metabolism has slowed way down. And now your brain says, hey, it's time to wake this character up. And so your adrenals start kicking out cortisol. And your heart rate starts speeding up, and your liver starts converting glycogen into glucose, into blood sugar, and your blood sugar rises, and your blood pressure rises, and your cortisol rises, and then you go check your fasting sugar in the morning, and you find out that it's higher than you wanted it to be.
Right.
Well, for some people, that dawn effect can be quite significant.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and unfortunately, what happens in diabetic patients is that their medication doses are adjusted based on that dawn effect, and they may be getting more and during the morning or more hypoglycemic drug, and therefore they will drop to low levels and be symptomatic during the course of the day. You know, that's why something you mentioned, I picked up on, you said your finger prick, you should have a continuous glucose monitor. Mm-hmm. And it was covered by insurance. Your insurance carrier will pay for it. And it is a huge educational tool. I don't know why we wait till people become diabetic before we give them the continuous glucose monitor. Right. Every pre-diabetic, everybody at risk should have it.
That's right. If anybody who's overweight, anybody who's sedentary, anybody whose A1C even hits 5.6 or 5.7 should start monitoring their glucose.
Does that glucose monitor require a smartphone?
Yes, they do. They do require a smartphone, and you don't have to prick yourself. You can basically just scan and know what level you're at after anything you eat or at any time at random. Yep. There is no pricking involved. There's no pain involved. And it's a huge educational tool. Like, you know, for example, everybody thinks oatmeal is a great breakfast, and it is. It is a very healthy food. But if you're putting a lot of brown sugar and you're putting a lot of other sweeteners in your oatmeal.
And
now,
raisins and nuts and cranberries.
Well, some if you're not putting sugar, but you're putting a little bit of raisins for the sugar and then some walnuts, they're not bad things. But
people load it with everything.
But people load it. But the point is that you can then see what happens to your sugar level as opposed to, say, if you were to have eggs. And that is a huge educational tool for you, mm-hmm. and it gives you an idea of what you can and cannot eat or when you should eat or if your symptoms are correlating with what's happening to your sugar levels.
And the apps will often allow you to see a longitudinal picture.
Yeah.
You'll see that your sugar started here, and then when you ate, it went to there, and then when you exercised, it went to here.
Yep.
And that's really a great way to see what your lifestyle and your diet and your activity is impacting your sugars.
My I guess I'm looking to find out, in terms of the remission with my blood sugar levels, what is my target level I'm ideally shooting for that I can, exercise and my exercise quotient is good. I'm cleaning up my diet, and I'll never take any medication. So I just want to know the time frame and what goal I should be looking for before I get my next A1C test.
Okay. Now, I would object to one of those statements, and that is I would never take any medication. All right. Medications all have drawbacks, but going unmedicated can often be a much more serious drawback than being medicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at something like even a supplement like berberine is very effective for some low levels type 2 diabetics, but metformin does a real nice job for others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the overweight ones, semaglutide, and the newer ones out, Marjano is
Manjaro.
Manjaro.
Yeah. Manjaro, Wegovy. Yeah. So many names out there. Yeah.
Right. Yes. A lot of things that will help them knock off their weight and lower their sugars. So, you know, be a little hesitant about being dogmatic about what you will and won't do. Do your best do your best to do it the way you're doing, but then keep an open mind if you're not successful, okay?
Remember, the continuous high glucose levels in your blood are going to damage the smallest of blood vessels first. Right. You're not going to see it or notice the impact right away, but the smallest of blood vessels, the peripheral vessels in your hands, your feet, your brain, your kidneys, your eyes, they are being damaged. And some of that is hard to fix once it's gone. So you don't want that to occur. So your question was, what should a target glucose level be? And that depends on your activities.
I would love to get it, you know, down in the fives. If you get it below 6.5, by definition, you are no longer a diabetic. And I would like to get it below 6 if we possibly can.
Yeah, and go ahead.
What before on my blood sugar levels when I'm testing them? Like I said, I've gone, you know, 131, 119, and now I'm down like 112 for the week.
Yeah.
Where am I going?
That's all good because your fasting sugars now are below our definition of diabetes. Okay, 126 is the formal definition of diabetes. A sequence of multiple sugars over 126 defines diabetes. So you are down in an acceptable range if you're using fasting sugars as your target. I prefer to couple that with an A1C to see how you're doing over time.
Really, my goal is to keep you between 80 and 90. If you could continue doing what you're doing with diet and exercise, the goal is to see a solid between 80 and 90. That would be ideal, optimal.
Great. Hey, I had one other question for Dr. Mixon. A couple months ago, he talked about that $1 million heart medication that was a private company in development. Does he have an update on that?
The first human studies are currently underway. They've put together their study group, and they're plugging away. So the idea is to find out, you know, is it going to be as effective in humans as it is in animals? And what will the adverse effects in humans be? I'm anticipating that it's probably going to be successful. I'm guessing that a few years from now, because we're looking at a 5-year window with the FDA to get things approved. But if the studies are successful, 5 years from now, I think we will be able to get rid of atherosclerotic heart disease.
Thank you.
Exciting. That's some good news. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much for your call and enjoy your run. All right, we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine, and we're going to talk a little bit more about why longevity cares so much about that A1C and your blood sugar, why it's important to know those numbers. We'll be right back in just a moment. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon this morning. Also in the studio, Dr. Samira Umat. And we also have guest doctor from our Tacoma Longevity Clinic, Dr. Jimenez, here as well to answer your questions and talk with you. And our last caller was wanting to know the correlation between blood sugar and A1C and pretty much wanting to know the basics. And you gave some information about that. And that is why longevity is such an important thing to test first.
cost. And we offer that still, that free health analysis appointment to you if you're not a longevity patient. And Dr. Umat, you've been doing these for several years. Maybe you can kind of break it down and explain what that blood test and definitely what that Embody test tells the doctor.
Yeah, you know, it's a basic thing that in this day and age with technology at our fingertips, literally, everybody should know. And if your doctors are not telling you, you can find out for yourself. Like I said, the continuous glucose monitor is here, and it's a huge education tool. And if after a few weeks of using it, you have an idea, you don't have to use it all the time. Right. But it will get you started on the right way about what is good for you and what works and what doesn't work. And I've seen people change their lifestyle and just lose weight simply by knowing what they're eating and how it's affecting their sugar levels. And self-knowledge is power. And what we try to do is two simple things for you. One is tell you your hemoglobin A1C. As we talked about in the last segment, the glycosylated hemoglobin is the damaged cells that increase your A1C level and therefore your risk for many, many conditions. We talked about some of them like kidney, eyes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, cancer. Inflammation is bad as an underlying fire, literally, chronically. So inflammation is viewed as bad, but in an acute situation, you all need an inflammatory response to begin the healing process. It's bad when it continues for prolonged periods of time and continues to smolder and damage other things. So you want to know where your A1C is. If you're approaching prediabetes, which is 5.7%, we know we can reverse it for you. Everybody used to say diabetes is not reversible. It's a chronic condition, yes, but type 2 diabetes can be reversed, and therefore you will be reducing your risk for early mortality, memory loss, dementia, cancer, and so many other things. The other one that Lynette, you mentioned, is the InBody, and that looks at your ratio of visceral fat to muscle. Mm-hmm. Remember, muscle is the currency of aging. I've said this time and time and time again. The higher your muscle mass, the better off you will be as you get older. Unfortunately, what happens with aging is that muscle mass tends to deteriorate. So you've all heard me say sarcopenia. Well, at this conference, I heard a new term called pre-sarcopenia. Mm-hmm. And all that means is that now you don't have the diagnosis of loss of muscle mass, but you're heading in that. And as you all know from listening to us, we're not about being normal. We are about being optimal. And so you want to avoid pre-sarcopenia as well, which is happening to all of us. So ratio of what is happening to muscle and visceral fat, body fat, is very important. And that's what this tells us. But more importantly, I've said that this initial visit is just a lost lead for us because it gives you a basic idea, but it is when you commit to the program for a year that you really find out the nitty-gritty of what we can do for you. Mm-hmm. Because today, more than ever before, you can change the course of your future. Your aging is your responsibility and within your reach. And if you really want to know what your nutrient levels are, what is the significance of those nutrients, what should you be eating, how should you be eating it, when should you be eating, what nutrients are important for you, what is your personal cardiac risk factor, what are your omega-3 levels, what is your genetic risk, what are your telomere lengths? Well, guess what? We can find out.
Yes. And that's why we want you to come here to Longevity. Get that free health analysis appointment. Get started. Find out what's going on in your body and with your health and the things that you are at risk for. And then if you decide to take that bigger blood panel test, that tells you all about your hormone levels and thyroids and all of those things.
Lots. Oh my gosh.
So yes. Much information. Mm-hmm. And you can get started on living a healthy life because we want you to be
stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and
happier. Make that first step. Here's what you do. You get the phone number, which is so easy. You can even speak it into your phone. 866 86 Young. That's 866-86 Young. Pick the day, the time, even the clinic closest to you. We have a longevity clinic in Kirkland, one in Tacoma, and also one in Linwood. You can also go to our website, and that's where you can get lots of information as well. LMClinic.com. That's LMClinic.com. All right. You've got some information. Keep those numbers handy. We're going to take some more phone calls now. We're going to talk about magnesium. Barbara is on the line with us. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Thank you. I have been a listener to your program for, I think, 20 years.
Wonderful.
Maybe you've been on longer. I just appreciate it so much and have gained so much good advice. And the little piece of advice I'd like to ask for today is, how do you take magnesium so that it doesn't cause diarrhea?
You take less of it.
There we go.
It also depends on the form that you're taking.
Yeah, and what you're using it for.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're magnesium.
Well, because I've been told it's very important. I keep hearing advice that it's a very important supplement.
You know, and it is. And, you know, some forms of magnesium are very poorly absorbed from the gut, and they do pull a lot of water into the bowel and give you loose stools. But, of course, that's their purpose. Magnesium citrate, which is plain old milk of magnesia.
Okay, that's
what milk of magnesia is. Okay, magnesium citrate. And it is, very little of it gets into your bloodstream. It almost all stays in the bowel and pulls water in and makes you poop. But there are a lot of other forms of magnesium. There's magnesium aspartate, magnesium tartrate.
Threonate.
Actually, the magnesium threonate is extremely good at getting across the blood-brain barrier and helping your blood vessels in your brain to expand and provide better blood flow to your neurons.
So how do you know what kind of magnesium to take, doctors?
Our optimal memory has magnesium threonate, very different from our muscle relief.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it depends on what you're after. Yes. We have a form in our supplement called Muscle Relief, and it's a mixture of magnesium that gets across into your bloodstream reasonably well. And so if you're getting muscle cramps, that sort of thing, then that the Muscle Relief works very nicely. But when we're dealing with people that were trying to improve their cognition, then they get the threonate. So different magnesium salts. Yes.
I'm 83, and I want to keep my brain. So if it would help my brain, I would very much like that.
If the brain don't work, the rest don't matter. Well, we can buy it from us.
Mm-hmm. We've got it here.
How do I do that?
Well, you go to our website.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
LMClinic.com.
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 Right. And that takes you to our website, and then we have a little store there. You can do a search.
You can call us.
And the name of the one I need to ask for is magnesium trionate?
Threonate.
Is that the one?
Theonate, T-H-E, theonate.
Yeah. Okay, theonate.
Theonate.
Excellent. And I just ordered it online then.
Yeah, or you can call any of our clinics. Just call the clinic and say, hey, you know, I'd like to order some magnesium threonate, and ladies will get it shipped out to you within 24 hours.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. That's exactly what I needed to know, and information I would have never come across on my own.
All right.
Very
take
good.
Take care, my dear.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. Great question.
You see, I take the threonate twice a day myself.
Okay.
I take it at bedtime and I take it in the morning. And then I use the muscle relief whenever I overstress my muscles and they start to cramp and get sore. I use the muscle relief forms for that.
The muscle relief is my go-to. I absolutely love that supplement. It is, you know, for people who have restless legs or a little bit of irritability in their feet. Mm. Oh my God, that supplement is a good
one. Also helps to lower blood pressure.
Yeah, lots of things.
Lots of
and then,
good reasons.
You know, when I did those half marathons in the distant remote
quote past in another life.
I think it was just year before last.
Yeah, last month. Yeah.
You know, it was our relief factor and muscle relief that got me through. I did not take a single pain medication any day. It was muscle relief and relief factor.
There you go. All right. Now, if you're going, okay, how do I know what kind of magnesium to take and how much? And talk to the doctor. Right?
By the way, we measure too. Yeah. We do a nutritional analysis of our objective measures. We do that in our clinic.
There you go. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. It's almost 9 o'clock. You stay right there. And if you have a question about anything related to aging or your health, we are here for you at Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give you the phone number. We are live in the studio today with three doctors. 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770 is that number to call. And we'll be right back with hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Stay right there.